one into the night, deep into right, way out of here.
Swung on,
bit crushed,
and the Phillies are going to lead it.
Harper, the swing of his life.
The 0-2 pitch, swing and a miss, struck him out.
From WHYY, this is your Friday edition of Hittin' Season. My name is Justin Clue. I write for Baseball Prospectus, and I'm the author of the new book, Summer of the Cheap Wieners, what the 1941 Phillies were doing while Joe DiMaggio was making history. Available at booksellers now. I'm joined by Liz Rocher, editor of Sabres Baseball Research Journal. Happy rainy afternoon, Elizabeth.
Happy rainy afternoon to you. How lucky that there's no baseball today to be rained out. Art, isn't that just fortunate?
There are six baseball teams that have yet to play a game, despite the Major League Baseball season starting. The A's and Blue Jays will be playing a game. The Rockies and Marlins will be making their 2026 debuts. And the Royals and Braves, the Phillies division rival, have yet to play a game this year. They will all be playing their first games of the season this day. The Yankees and Giants will be facing off again. They started their season on opening night. So baseball is really something against teams playing on consecutive days to start the season. This is an ongoing issue. I know there are reasons why, but it just always feels like such a tease to give you baseball back, you know, assuming there's one team you follow in particular, like we do here at Hittin' Season, and then they pull that team away from you the next day. So I would say it's a good thing the Phillies won their opening day contest against the Rangers 5-3, because otherwise you get to sit in this day every year and just wallow in a loss that bummed you out. And we don't have to do that this year, Liz.
No, we don't. No, we don't, thankfully.
Quite fortunate, but it was a big opening day across Major League Baseball, despite Paul Skeens got shelled in Flushing by the New York Mets. Couldn't even make it out of the first. Couldn't even get three outs, Liz. Your chief Cy Young contender in the National League could not put those Mets away, and their potent new lineup was really showing off its stuff. You also had rookies across the league logging their first career hits with the Mets, the Cardinals with J.J. Weatherholt, Carson Bang with the Mets, Kevin McGonigal with the Tigers, Justin Crawford, of course, with the Phillies. Even Munetaka Murakami with the White Sox managed to get some offense in between the thrashing they received on opening day. And hey, ask anybody. The Mike Trout bounce back season is on. It was already being predicted across the sport. But yesterday, Mike Trout put on a little show to say, hey, I may be in my mid-30s, but I am not too broken to play baseball yet. So all sorts of narratives, storylines, sagas, dramatics, it all started yesterday, Liz, the conclusions of which await us months from now in the future when everyone's talking about how quickly the whole season went by in 2026. But like I said, in a sun-soaked ballpark in South Philadelphia yesterday afternoon, the Phillies won their opener 5-3 over the Texas Rangers to get the 2026 season off to a victorious start. Liz, just before we get into the actual events of this game and everything that was exciting about it, everything that was not exciting about it, what were you able to just leave this win feeling good about the Phillies?
Yeah. I mean, it would have been very concerning if they hadn't won. This would be a very different podcast. We'd be sounding very different right now. It would be a lot more depressing. But they, you know, they managed to keep it all together, and they won. They didn't get there weren't a ton of hits. I mean, they got 10 hits, but they left quite a few guys on base. But, you know, they got the big hits where it counted. I mean, and who would have thought that Alec Bohm would hit an opening day home run?
Just ain't the Phillies if they're not going 1-for-6 with runners in scoring position, but they did manage to knock a few runs in as well, starting with Kyle Schwarber's home run in the first inning. This was the second straight year he's homered on opening day, and if my math is correct, he also homered on opening day 2022. Kyle Schwarber loves to hit home runs on opening day. It is it's one of his best qualities, I would say.
It is. Yes.
Yeah, early on in this game, Kyle Schwarber chipped a Nathan Eovaldi curveball into the opposite field seats in the first inning. Did you notice something about this home run, Liz, when it happened? Because Kyle Schwarber was batting second. Trey Turner was actually on base when he hit the home run. Interesting concept, Liz. Is this the beginning of a new era of other people coming in to score when Kyle Schwarber hits home runs?
It could be. It started on opening day, baby. Let's see how far we could take it.
Kyle Schwarber told reporters after the game, I really do believe that we've got a pretty complete team here. And you know, at least for a day, they certainly did. And I want to talk about this comment a little bit because, it's a way that this team has been not framed, essentially. I don't remember complete being a word we used too often during the winter. I'm not saying they're not. It's just not how a lot of people, I think, were characterizing this team, especially given the issues people had were that they hadn't changed enough or they hadn't gotten enough or they hadn't done enough. But when the Phillies need offense, well, Kyle Schwarber can get you some of that. Brandon Marsh and Alec Bohm, they were hitting for extra bases yesterday. Other guys in this lineup, who shall be unnamed for now, are supposed to be able to be causing trouble the same way Schwarber does and get you that offense that you need. Need a clean inning after you've had your little offensive rally? Well, multiple pitchers on this team who can get you 6 or 7 clean innings, as Christopher Sanchez did on opening day. Uh-oh, bullpen imploding? Well, let's bring in one of the best closers in baseball to clean things up. And as Jason Stark pointed out today in The Athletic, the Phillies have another component nobody's really even talking about. With Trey Turner at the top of their batting order and Justin Crawford batting in the 9-hole, their lineup is bookended by two of the fastest guys in the sport who, you know, once the game gets going, are hitting back-to-back. They get to take advantage of that fun little second leadoff hitter that the 9-hole hitter can be when you have somebody effective enough in that role, and Justin Crawford looked nothing if not effective yesterday. So, Liz, do you agree with Kyle Schwarber? Complete? Again, not a word we used a whole lot to describe the Phillies coming into the season, but certainly could be true.
I mean, we were all pretty concerned with whether they were getting good enough. You know, you're right. None of us really thought about them being a complete team. Because if we asked ourselves that, the answer would be yes. And then the podcast would be over. In order for us to talk about things continually, you know, things had to be a little bit different.
Yes, and I don't know how people necessarily pictured things going on opening day, but facing the Rangers at home with the Nationals coming up after the Rangers series is over, I just feel like this is a chance for the Phillies to get off on the right foot. Got some beatable teams. They got their team at full strength, the Phillies do, and they're going to be putting some of their best pitchers out there against lineups they should be able to handle. So I feel like you're not out of line to say that the Phillies have a chance here to get off to a very satisfying start, to say the least. You know, I don't think we need to see another extreme like 2024 where they absolutely eat everybody's lunch for half the season and you're like, you spend part of the time just waiting for like, okay, when's that other shoe going to drop? When's this all going to balance out the way that it always cosmically does? And it did in that season. But I would like them to take advantage of these early opponents, Liz. I mean, people are starting to notice that after the All-Star break, the Phillies have what may be an unprecedented gauntlet of Dodgers, Mets, and Yankees series all in a row. So it's a good time to take advantage of opponents that you can beat. So I mean, are you looking forward to the Phillies kind of taking advantage of this of these opponents at the beginning of the season here?
They have to, because you're right. The second half of the season is hideous, so they need to bank the wins while they can. And you know, we all have different opinions on what it means to win games now versus games later. You know, the importance of wins, you know, in September versus April, but every win's important and they need to get a lot of these. So let's hope that, you know, opening day was a portended good things for the Phillies, and at least they'll get one more win against the Rangers before moving on.
Well, Kyle Schwarber's home run put them up 2-0 early, and with Christopher Sanchez on the mound, you know, he can make a lead like that stand up. But fortunately, he didn't have to, because in the fifth inning, Alec Bohm came to the plate. The Phillies had a chance to add, but actually, before Bohm came to the plate, Schwarber and then Bryce Harper came to the plate. Both of them struck out, with runners on first and second. Now, those are two big bats, Liz, that you really want to come through in that situation. Obviously, Schwarber's getting something of a pass, because he's already, you know, quote-unquote, done his job that day. But, you know, attention once again turns to Bryce Harper, and, you know, ultimately, again, this game was a win, but Bryce Harper didn't have too great a day yesterday. That continues a string of games and appearances where, he says things like, I want to focus more on drawing walks this year. But then you see him more and more of these classic four pitch at bats where, you know, he's swinging at three of them and letting one go by. And it just doesn't look like the kind of approach a person has when their intent is to draw more walks. And everybody saw that home run in the World Baseball Classic, but that gets, you know, further and further away with each passing day. And I don't know. I mean, did you view that as a turning point for Harper, despite him still looking like he needs to make some adjustments in what remained of the spring after that and now with opening day behind us?
Do you feel like he made all the adjustments, or do you think he's making more?
I think people were looking at that home run as the sign that things are clicking again for him, and I'm maybe a little more reluctant to believe that.
Yeah. Yesterday was not a good day, especially after Schwarber and Bohm hit a home run, and other guys were on base. I mean, Justin Crawford had two hits, and Bryce Harper had, you know, two Ks. It's not looking good, especially after all of everything you said during the offseason and how we at least ended the World Baseball Classic with that home run. But I think, yeah, we should all be trepidatious about anything concerning Bryce Harper going forward, because he's got to show us that he's back. And thus far, he hasn't done a lot of convincing.
As you said, it was 0-for-4 with two strikeouts for Bryce Harper on the day. Ultimately, yeah, it didn't matter. The Phillies got the offense they needed, but everybody's waiting for that moment that kind of shows Bryce Harper is hitting again. Most exciting part of his day was probably the last play of the game when he made that diving stop as part of a game-ending ground out to first, and yeah, it's good to see him do stuff like that. You want to see him do other stuff too. He also had a throw that hit a runner in the back and led to some of that trouble we're going to talk about that the Phillies let in a little later in the game. Harper told WIP recently, "Obviously the big number for me is 20. I want to be able to play 20 years. To be able to do that for 15, super excited about it. Super humble to be able to do it here in Philly." I mean, these are the kind of comments I don't think it's strange to hear Harper saying, but I mean, what does this tell you about his mindset right now? That, yeah, he's like, oh, yeah, I'm going to play here for 20 years. And then earlier in the offseason, there was all those issues. He was taking it very personally that the rumor was out there that the Phillies were going to trade him, which obviously wasn't true. But, he wanted to address it anyway, because it's clearly an issue that bothers him. But I feel like being here and I feel like he wants to know the future. I think he wants a very specific, clear view of the future that people just can't have. Human beings just don't see into the future. We're not built like that. But Harper seems to want to know exactly what's going to happen next. And Liz, he's just not going to get that.
No, I think Harper has mostly managed to hide something, an aspect of his personality from all of us. And that's that he's a control freak. Like, not every baseball player has to be that way. Not every great, once in a generation baseball player has to be that way. But I think he is a huge control freak, which is why, he's saying so much, because he's like, if I say all of this, I'll have to do it. Or if I say all of this, I can make it happen. You know, he just wants some sureness, which is why he was pushing the Phillies for an extension a few years ago. Mm-hmm. He doesn't want to have to think about where he's going to play after the Phillies, contract is over. He wants to have all of that locked down so he doesn't have to think about it.
Maybe that's it. Maybe he just doesn't want to have to think about that stuff, so he can focus exclusively on hitting. But I don't know. I maintain there's a lot of stuff rattling around in there in his head right now.
Oh, completely.
I think it's only natural for somebody who's kind of in a spot where, things are a little different right now. We heard all year from Phillies beat writers last year that something's just a little off. Something's not right here. And we could probably come up with a bunch of theories, grounded, realistic theories, without ever knowing for sure what that might have been. But whatever it is, I think you could have to say it's continued for Harper to this point, that the struggle is real. And I don't think it's impossible for him to figure it out. I think everybody's just waiting for him to figure it out. Jared Frank at The Good Fight has an article up today about Harper's renewed interest in drawing walks, like I mentioned. Something you can't really do when you're swinging at three of the four pitches pitches you see in an at-bat. But Frank wrote, "We only have bat speed data dating back to 2023, but it's probably fair to assume that Harper cannot swing the bat in 2026 as fast as he did in 2018. That may mean that the exact same approach at the plate would produce different results. Even if he can replicate the walk rate he had in 2018, he may end up with a very different stat line overall." I mean, do you agree that that is where we are here with Bryce Harper? We're sort of at a Greg Maddux moment, if you will, where he's got to, you know, do the equivalent of what Maddux had to do, stop relying on velocity as it was going down and start relying more on wiliness. And Maddux was able to make that. He's one of the most famous examples of a premier player who made that adjustment that he needed to make as things were changing for him in his career. And yeah, I mean, if Harper's swing is just, you know, even when he is trying to swing his way out of an issue, out of a slump, the way he always is, if that bat's not moving the same speed, you know, A, does he know that? B, does he know that and has he accepted that? C, what exactly is going to change?
Yeah. Like that, I was just thinking the same thing. Like, the most important thing is that he has to accept that. And it's not even just accepting that his bat isn't moving as fast. It's accepting that he's getting older and that he cannot reverse the aging process. Doesn't matter how much of other people's blood you get pumped in your body or whatever it was that he was
doing. It's his own blood. It's his own blood that gets taken out and put back in. You make it sound crazy.
I make it sound like that other guy who's trying to reverse the aging process. This is kind of why I'm worried about Harper, because I remember Ryan Howard later in his contract. It was very frustrating because he seemed unable to change anything about what he was doing at all. It was not known whether or not he had tried, but it was obvious that something needed to change and he just wasn't capable of it. And I think Harper is more than capable of it, but he has to recognize it. He has to recognize that it's happening. And maybe, you know, they certainly have to have data on the Phillies about swing speed. I don't know if it's that important to them or if it's something that Harper knows, but you would hope it's something that they know. And he really just has to accept that he's getting older. He just has to. And I think he doesn't want to accept that he's on the sort of the downslope. Not the downslope, but, you know, it's of the hill of your career. You were on your way up, you hit the top, and now you're on your way down.
I would think if we can sit here and talk about something like Harper's bat speed, I would have to think he is aware of that, and that the Phillies.
Yeah, like,
that
we're idiots.
which is why I'm reframing it. Like, is he accepting that? Like, put the age part aside, because it doesn't even really matter why it's happening. It's more just like, look at these numbers. You used to be able to, you know, you'd fall off for a couple of days, couple of weeks, whatever. And then one day, you know, you go through that intensely violent swing you have and make incredible contact. And that ball goes and lands in the Delaware River and everybody feels better. And it's great. But if that's not the answer anymore, or as frequently, perhaps, then yeah, is that something he's going to be able to accept and adjust? And we'll see moving forward. I do think it'll happen. I do think we're going to see some hot Bryce Harper, and I don't think it's going to take necessarily even that long. But yeah, just still waiting to see that click into place. Didn't have to rely on Harper, which was good on opening day, because like I said, when he and Schwarber came up with two men on in the fifth inning yesterday, they both struck out, and well, You've seen this before. The fuse of the Phillies offense at an opportunity to add to their 2-0 lead, which, you know, you felt like two runs, it's great, and Christopher Sanchez can make that stand up, but let's get a little more in here just to make everybody feel safer, just to get the people out of their seats here. It's been a couple innings since we scored. And with two outs, Alec Boehm stepped in. Of those three guys, the least likely one you're going to be thinking about hitting a home run. And yeah, he stepped in and clocked an opposite field homer of his own, sneaking it over the fence in the right field corner.
Beautiful.
Now, Boehm's having a bit of an interesting week, as I think a lot of people learned yesterday. It's been reported in the Associated Press. Boehm, quote, has sued his parents for millions of dollars, accusing them of siphoning large amounts of his money into financial accounts they managed for him, and then using some of the cash to pay their own expenses. Liz, it is always a sad situation when you start seeing headlines like that. I'm sure everyone was reminded upon seeing that of the sad of Ryan Howard having a financial kerfuffle with his own family as well. Mm-hmm. It's just not something anybody should have to deal with. And the way that this story is set up, it's more like, it sounds like Boehm was more or less like, all right, it's time to kind of get a little more serious or just even like aware of my finances and where things are and how things
are. I'm a grown-up man now.
Yeah, and he starts going through this stuff, and then he goes to his parents and says, oh, hey, can I have access to these accounts? And they were essentially like, no. And generally, they were freezing him out, according to the story, of 3 or 4 different accounts, and that's kind of what started all this. And
that's my money, guys.
Yeah.
My guess is that he got an accountant. He might have, mm-hmm. My guess is that he suspected that he got an accountant to sort of see how much of it was siphoned off. My God. It's terrible. Don't do that.
Yeah.
It's evil. And your children are not, you know, your, what are they? They're not your slaves. They're not there to make money for you.
Boehm now believes they, quote, converted a sizable amount of his money from those accounts to their own use, according to the lawsuit. So, I mean, Liz, for a player like Boehm, who's been criticized for his displays of emotion in the past, I mean, again, we have like nebulous comments like we got last year about how something just seems off. And then you get little glimpses of like, all right, well, Castellanos was clearly a problem in the locker room or disagreeable at times, even if he was a good teammate. I know Dave Dombrowski mentioned Matt Strom is kind of going against the flow. Obviously, at the Harper and Manfred thing that blew up, and, you know, just little hints at sources of conflict within the Phillies locker room that may have contributed, may not have contributed to the general well-being of the team or the mental state of the team individually and collectively. And again, Boehm, a player who at times has frustrated people, even on the Phillies, with his displays of emotion. Not something that's ever really bothered me about him, but apparently bothered Rob Thompson enough at one point to bench Boehm during a playoff series. That's got to be something. But I only bring it up because this feels like the kind of thing that's going to get in a guy's head. I mean, he's suing his own parents. What I mostly feel here is sympathy for Alec Boehm, because that is a really rough situation. But, you know, from a baseball standpoint, you got to hope it's not something that's going to like live in his head all season. But it's the kind of conflict that just lingers in the background and just makes things unpleasant.
Yeah. I mean, you have to hope at this point. I mean, he's doing it because he believes that his parents have done him wrong. And you have to hope that, you know, his feeling about the righteousness of his cause is something that helps keep him up. Because really, as long as there's forensic accounting evidence that they did this, that's it. You know, they'll have to settle with him. And that's probably what will end up happening. They'll have to settle. But, you know, I would hope that, you know, the fact that he's doing something about it after presumably a number of years of having suspicions would also be like a positive thing. You know, he's not playing with this underneath him anymore. You know, he's actually taking control of it and doing something about it. So maybe, you know, there are two ways to look at it. I'm sure he's definitely upset that his parents have screwed him over, but I'm sure he's feeling good about, you know, I got an accountant. I've taken control of it. They're not going to touch this anymore. Goodbye.
Well, however that situation shakes out, I'm sure they'll keep us aware of it. But it's mostly just, yeah, an unpleasant development for one of the Phillies' starting players. It's just, you know, just very sad to see. But regardless, Boehm was able to come through for the Phillies, knocked in 3 runs, gave him a 5-0 lead, and, you know, with Christopher Sanchez on the mound, that's exactly what you want to see. So let's talk about Christopher Sanchez, Liz.
Yay.
Christopher Sanchez, who coming into this game, MLB.com was, you know, as they were pumping out their churn of content going into opening day, they had a top 10 list of the starting pitchers for opening day. So obviously Paul Skeens was at the top of that list. Tarek Skubal, they had, you know, number 2. And, you know, I'll give you those two specifically. I'll give you them. But around now is when I need to start seeing Christopher Sanchez's name. Well, no. MLB.com says Garrett Crochet of the Red Sox comes in at number 3, followed by Yoshinobu Yamamoto of the Dodgers. And finally, they slotted Christopher Sanchez in at number 5. And I got to tell you, Aaron Judge last year in 2025 was worth 9.7 wins above replacement. It's not the only stat. You know, it's not, it's a stat that that functions. It gives you a general idea. It doesn't cover everything, but we're using it here. Aaron Judge was worth 9.7 wins above replacement. Christopher Sanchez was worth 8. That is the second most in all of baseball last year. I'm just going to remind people of this. I hope you are aware of this, that only Aaron Judge was worth more wins than Christopher Sanchez last year. Yes, Christopher Sanchez was worth more wins above replacement than Shohei Ohtani last year, than Paul Skeens last year, Cal Raleigh, Bobby Witt, everybody but Aaron Judge. I know. I need to read the individual names too, because you need to hear this, folks.
Yes.
Only one pitcher was behind Aaron Judge exclusively on the WAR rankings last year. For some reason, that only gets you the number 5 slot on MLB.com's little list before he was pitching against the Rangers, but whatever. Christopher Sanchez came through like a pitcher who had the kind of season he did last year. 10 strikeouts over 6 innings, allowed only 3 hits and 0 walks. Todd Zielecki wrote, Christopher Sanchez was the third pitcher in franchise history born outside of the United States to start the opening game. The others were Venezuelan Omar Dahl in 2001 and Canadian Oscar Judd in 1946.
Whoa.
This is how a dirty inning episode is born, by the way.
I was just going to say, that is a name that you need to investigate, because I'm sure he has some bad starts under his belt.
Sanchez
is
also
Oscar Judd. It has to.
Sanchez also, Zielecki writes, became the 6th pitcher since at least 1900 with at least 10 strikeouts and 0 walks over 6 or more scoreless innings on opening day, joining a group that includes Hall of Famer Bob Gibson and Phillies lefty Chris Short. I mean, what can you say at this point, Liz? Christopher Sanchez is a bona fide ace. We saw anybody who wants to claim that like this kind of thing doesn't happen to the Phillies, you got to know. Christopher Sanchez was a quad A starter just kind of hanging around camp for a while, and he is now a bona fide ace who has received 2 contract extensions in the last few years, who is an opening day starter now, and who absolutely dominated the Texas Rangers. Never a concern. With Sanchez on the mound yesterday, everything was working. And, you know, you even saw after that 10th strikeout, you saw that emotion. He comes off pounding his glove. He's feeling it. It's going to be a great year for Christopher Sanchez, Liz. Just one game sample size, but it's hard not to think that.
That's when I felt like the real emotion of opening day. Like, I loved it when Justin Crawford got his first hit and seeing the home runs. But for me, seeing Chris Sanchez start opening day and do exactly what he wanted to do, get 10 strikeouts, you know, make Phillies history as just the 3rd player born out of the United States. Like, that's insane. The Phillies have been a thing for a really long time. Phillies have been around longer than almost every other baseball team. And that they just now had their 3rd starter from outside the United States is, I think, really important. I'm really happy for Chris Sanchez, and I'm not going to say that they're not paying attention to him for any particular reason, the media and whatnot, but I will say that maybe it's just that they don't find him very glamorous. Maybe there's that. I think he's perfectly fine and would do awesome if you just sat him down for an interview. I don't know. His kids seem awesome. They're cute.
I'll tell you right now.
Time to feature.
The amount of attention you're getting is not indicative of how good you are in Major League Baseball. I can assure you of that. Did I mention Paul Skeens got shelled yesterday?
Shelled. Oh, almost nothing made me feel as good as that. Oh, I hated it that it was the Mets, because I hate the Mets, but I was just so glad it happened.
Couldn't even get out of the first. Couldn't even record
three outs. Even the first inning.
You mentioned Justin Crawford. Got to talk about it. 2 hits and a run for the rookie. First big league hit on the first big league pitch of his career. Came up with the bases loaded and 2 outs later in the game. I wanted to see him blast the game right out of reach.
Oh, he wanted it too. He wanted it too.
Oh, so bad. So bad. Taking the Bryce Harper approach with that first pitch he saw in that 3rd
inning. Oh, yeah.
And just taking an absolute mighty whack at that thing and, you know, unfortunately
and
coming up dry.
And you know what? He earned that. He gets to take in on his opening day, you know, in his first big league game. He comes up with the bases loaded. Like, you got to take a righteous hack. You have to.
Absolutely.
It's your right.
He's already had a multi-hit game at that point. So, you know, what's he going to lose? What's he losing out on? So, yeah, I wanted to see him put one in the corner and clear the bases and really have some fun, get that stadium really popping. But unfortunately, nah, he fouled out in that one. Still a great day for the kid. Still a great beginning of the season. And I'm expecting cool things from Justin Johnson. I don't think I'm setting the bar too high. I don't think a lot of people are putting him at the top of the Rookie of the Year rankings. But at the same time, you can still be a really good player. And it's great to see. It's great to see a young player do well, even in just one game. Like I said, for Justin Crawford, I wanted him to be able to put the skills he has on display quickly so that everyone could see. It wasn't any kind of, you know, that he's not going to like sink into some kind of like bog or need a, like a couple of weeks to get his legs under him. I want him to just get on, hit like that triple I mentioned in spring training. Like he's showing off his skills down there in Clearwater and then an opening day has a multi-hit game. Looked great. Looked like a great nine-hole hitter. I'm very excited to see how this situation develops.
He looked like he had no fear. He didn't look nervous. He looked like he'd been there. You know, it was nice to see that he was just like, it was awesome. It was awesome just to see him get in there. They just like dropped him in there. He's like, all right, cool, let's go.
Well, obviously things were going a little too well in this game, and somebody's always got to blow it. So we got to talk about that, unfortunately. Christopher Sanchez was relieved by Jonathan Bolin, this year's not Matt Strom. That went pretty okay. We'll circle back to that. That was generally a fine development, but it was Kyle Backus's Phillies debut that created the issue. Gave up a single, gave up a home run to Jake Berger, then gave up another single. Then Bryce Harper tried to get an out at second that I mentioned before. His throw hit the runner in the back, went into the outfield. Things were getting pretty gross in the game's final stages. That 5-0 lead was...
It wouldn't have been a Phillies game if it wasn't that way. I'm just like, I'm so glad it happened. I was concerned it was going to end just really, really smoothly.
In the same way that, you know, a guy having a great first game of the season makes you set the bar even higher for that particular player. Getting blown up on the first day of the season is going to get you a reputation too, unfortunately. And so Kyle Backus has a hole to crawl out of with the fans at the moment. You know, it's not impossible. Phillies, again, I mentioned them being a complete team. Phillies are expected to have an even better bullpen than last year. Like that is very much still on the table. So Backus will have some work to do, but, I don't know, when the Phillies started that inning 5-0, Liz, I'm going to be honest with you. I feel like Joan Duran should have been in the game, even with it 5-0. Obviously not a save situation, and I'm pretty sure I'm alone on this. I don't think anyone's actually agreed with me on it, but I don't really care. It's opening day. Like, let's bring all our shiny toys out, and Duran's one of them. Bring him in, do the little intro thing, and, you know, let's make this a real quick ninth inning. Unfortunately, the Phillies, you know, they wanted to be cute first and bring in other pitchers. And what was even more comical is that when they did bring him in to clean up the mess that Backus caused, they did do his intro. But not only is it light out, so it's a little more muted, but I noticed, and I don't know if this will be a all-season thing, but, you know, lately there's been some conversations about what the Phillies have changed about the stadium and ads being places where they weren't before. And that started last year. The out-of-town scoreboard was converted into largely just advertisements. And Liz, that part of the stadium was part of the intro, like the fire and the spiders and all that. Like, you'd see that down there. Not this time. It was just in the ad banners alongside the upper decks and everything, but it didn't happen down there. So, you know, I guess you can't sacrifice any second of ad revenue, Liz. I mean, any second we're enjoying something is a second we're not getting inundated with John, the ad father, Middleton's midvertising. But hey, Duran took care of business, mostly. You know, another run came in, but he managed to get the game over. And Jason Stark pointed out that Duran became the first Phillies reliever ever to save a game at home on opening day. That's insane.
That's insane. But also, I don't know, either they've either won or lost convincingly until right now when they really needed when they needed someone to get a save for them on opening day.
Like the
you
third...
know, I, I'm just going to say the stuff about the Duran entrance being a little ad heavy. I realized that last year that because they started showing Duran's entrance every time in the ninth inning, they lost a whole commercial break of ad revenue.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, that's it. And hey, as we all know, that's the main part of baseball is the advertising. So we definitely we need to start thinking about that, Liz. Couple other Duran came in and the Phillies came out on top 5-3. A couple other notes from this game. The Phillies with two hits on the day were Brandon Marsh, Bryson Stott, Justin Crawford, and Trey Turner. So a lot of multi-hit games up and down the lineup. Brandon Nimmo leading off for the Rangers. Pretty much a non-factor in this game. Of course, he did manage to draw a walk later, so you had to watch that insufferable Brandon Nimmo run into first like it's some kind of thing. And
he sucks.
Fortunately, it didn't result in anything, but yeah, I wanted to mention Brandon Marsh had a pair of doubles in this game. Adolis Garcia, a couple of hard hit balls, didn't manage to do a whole lot other than that, but again, nothing totally discouraging. Trey Turner legged out an infield hit before that Schwarber home run and then tried to knock in Crawford when he was on base, but a diving catch from Rangers left fielder Sam Haggerty took that chance away. Turner also made a diving stop on a grounder that kept Jonathan Bolin from getting into too much trouble when he relieved Sanchez in the seventh. We also saw Zach Pop debut for the Phillies in the eighth, who challenged a ball call, which I thought the pitchers weren't going to be challenging the pitches themselves.
I think that is going to make it clear that JT is in charge of that because he did it and it was pretty definitive.
Yeah, and to be fair, it was like the smallest amount of space. The ball could be off the plate and still be a ball. It was 0.1 inches out of the strike zone. But as you say, we have the technology that does make that clear that, if there's daylight between that ball and the strike zone. And, he was right that it was close. But I think we're still right that maybe he's not the one who should be making that call. Because if Real Muto doesn't want to make that call, then I don't think it should be made. I think we're okay keeping it simple and putting all of our trust in JT Real Muto to make all the challenges of the ABS system, which was having its day. I believe it was the Mets as well, Liz, I read, that had the first successful overturn of a call using the ABS system. So it's well on its way, and it's not going anywhere. But, I don't know if Zach Pop should be the one making that call. I feel like it's a good policy. No pitchers should be making that call.
Yeah, that's what I, like, on one of the news reports yesterday, while I was watching baseball during the day, one of the announcers said, a lot of teams across baseball are finding it really difficult to handing over the ABS calls to pitchers. Like, around baseball, they're having issues with that. I just love that in no way on any team should any pitcher be trusted. They're all this way. It's kind of fun.
they got their own kind of brains. It's just a different approach. And I wouldn't if I was a pitcher. Yeah, the temptation to challenge every call that didn't go my way would be present constantly. I would be out of challenges by the end of the first inning. I would not want that power in my hands. I'd have enough to think about.
And relievers especially should not get this power because they're in there for one inning. And so every pitch they throw it feels more important because they're only going to throw like a handful of them. It's just one inning they're going to be out there usually. So like they're concerned with every single pitch they throw. Well, someone like Christopher Sanchez can let go of a bad call because he's going to throw another three innings.
I'd let Max Scherzer do it just because I want to see what he does with even more power in his hands. I also, it does make you think back to like, imagine that being like Jonathan Papelbon having the power to challenge a pitch.
Like, I'm sorry. Modern baseball could not contain Jonathan Papelbon. The baseball as we know it now is so shockingly different to the baseball back in 2012, 2013. It's so incredibly different in the last 10 to 15 years that I don't know what would happen if, like, if any of those guys came back.
Imagine Mitch Williams with the power to challenge his own pitch. Darren Dalton would have handcuffed him to the pitching mound between pitches. That would not have flown.
This is the question. Which catcher pitcher battery from the past would have gotten into a fist fight over the ABS system?
How about Cliff Lee and Carlos Ruiz?
That'd be Oh my God. as Cliff Lee literally just uses his fist to pound little Carlos Ruiz into the ground where he stands. Or little Carlos Ruiz is swinging him over his head. I like this. This is a cartoon. The pictures of baseball.
Well, baseball is back, and the Phillies are back in a big way. So after all the events of yesterday, they did come out on top, winning 5-3 after things got a little dicier once the Rangers got into the Phillies' bullpen. But ultimately, Kyle Schwarber, Alec Bohm on offense, Trey Turner on defense, Justin Crawford on the bases, Christopher Sanchez on the mound, and John Duran coming in relief. All of it came together, Liz, for a much more complete team victory, and that's exactly what you want to see on opening day. And now we have nothing to do. Now we have nothing to do but look forward to the rest of the season, and in the immediate future, that looks like Jacob DeGrom taking on Aaron Nola in Game 2 of the season. My eye just started twitching involuntarily already. It's way too early. It's not even April. It's way too early for that to be happening in the season.
When does Zach Wheeler come back? When is he back? I completely forgot that someone was going to have to pitch after Chris Sanchez.
Zach Wheeler is going to be making a rehab start. I'm glad you brought that up. At AAA. On Saturday, I believe he is scheduled to do that, and they are having some fun with it. Liz, according to ESPN, Zach Wheeler's minor league rehab start brings new meaning to the term ribbing. The Philadelphia Phillies ace missed the latter part of the 2025 season due to surgery to remove a blood clot in his throwing shoulder. Surgery entailed the removal of a rib, which Wheeler decided to keep in a closet in his home. Did we forget about this? I forgot about this. I definitely knew about it at one point. But I don't think it's the kind of thing you, if somebody does this, it's the kind of thing about them that you probably don't want to forget. It feels, you know,
you don't want to get on that person's bad side. You just really don't.
But that is why when he makes his rehab start on Saturday for the Iron Pigs, the team will be offering all you can eat rehab ribs as part of their game day menu.
Where is this in?
In Lehigh Valley.
In Lehigh Valley. Oh, my God. Mm-hmm. They love having fun when the major leaguers come through on rehab starts. They have a really good time with it, and I always appreciate that. I love a minor league franchise that could be quick on its feet and be like, nope, he's going to make a rehab start here. This is what we're going to do. And they arranged all-you-can-eat ribs in, like, the matter of a week or a few days. Like, I love it. Congrats to them.
Yes, you love
brilliant.
Minor league baseball, you know, there should always be more minor league baseball because they do stuff like this. It's fantastic. So we have Zach Wheeler to look forward to making a start on Saturday as he continues his rehab back to the team. It'll be DeGrom and Nola on Saturday at 4:00. God, I can't say it without laughing nervously. And then the next day things get even better as the Phillies face last year's opening day menace Mackenzie Gore, making his Texas Rangers debut after they made a trade for him from the Nationals during the offseason. He will face Jesus Luzardo. So that should be a pitching matchup for the ages, for sure. That should be a good one. Then it's Taijuan Walker taking on the Nationals when they come to town in Game 4 of the season on Monday, followed by, Liz, the scheduled Major League debut of Andrew Painter facing the Washington Nationals. So just a really exciting week of baseball for the Philadelphia Phillies as we start seeing some pieces come together, some new faces get their shot, and yeah, hopefully some old faces getting healthy and coming back to the team. So I feel like the vibes are good, and they have no reason not to stay that way, Aaron. So let's just keep that in mind.
Aaron.
4:05 p.m. tomorrow, Aaron.
Aaron. Please, Aaron. We're counting on you, Aaron.
Let's all bring our best knuckle curves to the game on Saturday and just make sure that everybody has a real nice time. I don't think there's any reason to be concerned yet, so let's just enjoy
ourselves. Be positive. Let's go into it with an open mind, happiness, positive vibes.
Any final thoughts before we close up here, Liz?
Enjoy baseball, guys. We always are sad when it leaves us, and I've been sad all offseason, so enjoy it.
Well, that'll do it for this episode of Hittin' Season. Thank you so much for listening. You can get 3 new episodes of Hittin' Season every week at billypenn.com/hittin'season. And there's always more content over at our Patreon at patreon.com/hittin'season as well. From WHYY, that's the ballgame. And we'll talk to you next time on Hittin' Season.